Okay.
Okay, greetings and hi.
Thank you.
Good to have you back again.
Okay, I hear the format has changed somewhat.
Somewhat, yes.
Okay, and I'm supposed to give a dissertation.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do make allowances, of course.
Code of conduct
Oh, okay.
in crunch situations. In dealing with preparation of those crunch situations, being appropriate behavior, it is necessary to plan for eventualities. List the eventualities that are possible in an outcome in current situations. You take known facts, known past events and how they resulted in the end in their outcomes. In this preparation and analyzing the data necessary for the preparation, you have to look at each possible outcome and prepare for each possible outcome. Ideally, you wish to have 10 possible outcomes with 10 preparations. Each preparation must be available. For example, you have 10 possibilities, you have 10 plans. To design and structure responses for these outcomes in such a way that it is possible to take one plan and apply it to a different scenario. For example, if you have to have equipment ready to transport, that equipment must fit into at least a minimum of two possible outcomes, preferably higher. So therefore, you're not straining yourself logistically, and these outcomes are working in order, an order that is necessary for the desired survival. So you plan 10 outcomes. You have equipment for each outcome. Preferably, the equipment can be cross-used in two or more possible outcomes. Now, also in preparation is training, such as building up the physique. This can be done numerous ways, from jogging, riding your two-wheeled vehicles that are powered by your legs, a exercise regime of chin-ups, push-ups, press-ups, frog hops, running on the spot, sparring, using an assortment of equipment and hand-to-hand techniques. But bearing in mind that when it gets down to hand-to-hand techniques, you're in deep doo-doo. Being able to fix up individuals that have been harmed. Basic battlefield medicine. Now, the possible outcomes. Let us go from the worst, and I will take one from the worst and one from the best. The worst being all out, hoof it, outnumbered, in deep doo doo, the shit has hit the fan and it's coming down. That is where a cohesive, drilled team is necessary to work in a unit of individuals with maximum capability bent on one plan and one plan only, and that is survival. That is predominant in all scenarios. In survival, it is necessary to do whatever is necessary. In the command structure, the commands by the commanding individual should be followed without question. As soon as there is a breakdown in the command structure, you're doomed. You are, I'm not quite sure what the word is.
You should.
No, it's worse than that. The importance of the team working as a unit with one purpose. Each individual members of the team have a specific duty. Best case scenario. Basically, it's just securing a perimeter and maintaining a low profile. Very simple, very basic. The team gets together and trains from time to time in a cohesive unit. But that is for you to decide on what the scenarios and possible outcomes are. I cannot give you that kind of information. I can aid you in... No, I can't aid you. Wish I could. However, I can aid you in another way.
Okay.
Mind games. Strategies. Okay. Fighting against outnumbered odds and how you survive. Okay, do you have any questions?
Yeah. One of the problems is keeping a low profile, even in the best case scenario, and all the way to the worst case, it's always necessary.
Correct.
Okay. Getting a drilled team together.
Mm-hmm.
Is something that you should have set up already, and with new members who might come in that could be useful, you can train them up as fast as possible, I assume.
Correct.
Okay. Now, how do we make sure that those people in a crunch situation will follow the commander to the T? They might say they do. How do you really find out? Test them?
No. You will see how they respond to the commanding officer in everyday interaction when he is not or she is not being the commanding officer. My company respects me. I have proved myself to them. They will do what I tell them to do. Even when we are sitting in the mess having a fun time, my company will do as I will tell them to do.
And how is this captaincy coming for you? Are you enjoying this part of your military life so far?
Well,
I've made up, you since you've been such.
No, I've made up my mind. I am a lifer.
Good.
I am going to do the full 500 years.
500?
Yes.
I didn't know it was that long.
That's only half my life.
Yeah.
If I live that long, which I plan to, I have planned to do everything to that goal. I wish to live a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing you did mention was code of conduct.
Code of conduct, yes. Code of conduct.
We didn't really discuss a lot of the code of conduct, except, of course, in making sure that everyone's following the leader.
Okay. Now, there's two sets of code of conduct. Let me start with the one that I've been trained to deal with. As a, first of all, a cadet lieutenant, then as a second lieutenant, and finally as a captain. The code of conduct for an officer is, first and foremost, Your personnel come first above your own existence. They are more important than you are. It is necessary to make sure that the guards are set before you go and rest. Your personnel are fed before you feed. You have to be fitter and more active than they are. You have to know when to listen. You have to be genuinely concerned about the well-being of each member of your company. You have to know all of them by name. You have to respect that they have each their own special needs. You have to be able to discipline them when they do something wrong, and yet be their friend after it is all over and done. Basically, it can be boiled down to look after your men, look after your women, look after your personnel. They are the reason for your existence. They come before everything else. You do not sleep until they have slept. You do not eat until they are sat down to eat. You do not go to the bathroom until all and every last one has been to the bathroom. You do not go into a warm environment until they have been warmed up. You do not go into a cool environment until they have cooled down. They are your reason for existing. Code of conduct for the ranks. Respect your officer. Look after her. Protect her. Make sure that she is of good health. Don't give her any unnecessary headaches. I am just saying from what I have read. I do not know it that well, unfortunately, having never been in the ranks. Any questions?
No, but you've definitely put it in a perspective that's very helpful for anybody who reads this.
Mm-hmm. As a commanding officer, respect your personnel. They're more important than your own life.
Well, earn their respect, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Lead by example.
Hmm. You're going to make a wonderful captain.
I'm going to try. I am just a cadet captain.
Well, for now.
Mm-hmm. Even though the company is mine and I am in charge of the company, I can be relieved at any time. I do not have to go through the formal procedure of a normal relief for whatever reason. If I make a small mistake that would normally be just a quiet whisper in the ear, I can be relieved. I have to be spotless.
Not a lot of pressure.
Yes. However, there is one thing that they cannot relieve me for, and at the moment I can't anyway. If I was a cadet captain, and cadet captains are quite common, and I got pregnant.
Is that common with cadet captains?
No, it's not that common, but it is not unheard of. Oh. Then I would have a second lieutenant, or rather a first lieutenant, assigned to me.
Didn't your captain get pregnant before you guys left?
Uh-huh.
She wasn't able to go with you.
No. Pregnant officers and personnel do not go into combat.
Right.
And whilst we're in combat, we are given medication once and once only that stops us from being pregnant.
Yeah.
Also halves our menstrual cycle.
Well, that's good for you.
Oh, yeah. Actually, when we had our little...
problem?
Yes, our little mess. I happened to be PMSing at the time.
That must have made you a little bit more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So here's one question for you. As with a commander who's counts their, you know, charges as more important than themselves, how do you deal with it when they get removed from living?
I take it personally.
I imagine you might.
I take it very personally.
Isn't this harsh on you, though? More stress?
Yes, it is. First of all, I get angry at the fact that they were stupid enough to get themselves terminated.
Right.
And then I get angry at myself for putting them in the position where they have to give their lives. Sometimes it's unavoidable. I look at it this way, that it was their time to go. That there is nothing that I can do about it. However, I'll do my damnedest to make sure that it doesn't happen. I had to, one of the last few weeks that we were in combat, I had to assign two individuals to do something that I knew that they wouldn't come back from. That I was basically sending them to their death.
And they knew this?
They knew it. They accepted it. And the hardest part was sending them off, telling them, yeah, I'm sorry I've got to do this to you. But it is important that that matter be dealt with.
There I would question my own leadership abilities in that matter.
Yeah, I questioned myself tremendously. When I saw my commanding officer of my regiment, he asked me how I dealt with it. And I explained to him how I did it. And he goes, would you have done it? Would you do it again? And I sat there and I said, I don't know. And then he asked me a very interesting question concerning one of our special operations. And he asked me, could I ever kill in cold blood? And I really don't know. I did. I have done. And I don't know if I can do it again. Each thing is case by case.
Oh, wow.
Anyway. On a happier note.
Happier note, indeed.
Uh-huh. You want to talk?
We don't have any time to talk. We have more speakers to come.
We have one more.
Oh, we only have one more.
Wait, if you want to pause your thingy there and go and get two of your blades. I'll kick your ass again.
All right, hold on.
As I... Hi.
Hi, Tina.
Hey, okay. I'll put on the last one. Hello.
You know, your son got a big chuckle out of me today.
Yeah. My son?
Nazriel?
Oh, Nazriel.
That son.
That son. I was about to say, which son?
No, your old son.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm back on duty again, sweetheart.
Yes.
Gives me better practice in my astral projection, better length of time, better duration, better focus.
Yes, yes.
I seem to focus better when I'm on duty, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So tomorrow I link up with the ship again.
Okay.
Back into that hole.
Yes, we will wait for Leica's, for you to be Leica's dinner.
Okay. Oh, I love it. Well, my dear, I believe you have some information for me.
Yes. Why did Tia bring up biological warfare?
Well, I don't know, but you're the expert, she says.
You can put shivers in horror. Biological warfare.
What a cheerful topic this is
going to be. Yes. Okay, opening statement. The purpose of warfare is to defeat your enemy. Plain and simple. Biological warfare is a nightmare. Atomic warfare, using lasers and atomic weapons and equipment, is horrific. But compared to chemical warfare and biological warfare, it's nothing. It is clean. It is tidy. It gives you a rough idea on how horrible biological warfare is. For example, using bacteria and viruses. Tuberculosis is almost eradicated, except for a new strain that has occurred that is resistant to all forms of antibiotics that worked before. Smallpox is eradicated. Smallpox is horrible. Cholera is almost eradicated. Bubonic plague is almost eradicated or easily controllable. However, new strains of these are far more deadly and far more nasty than atomic weapons. Now, in biological weapons, there is a very, very nasty subcategory. Viral weapons. Not bacteria, viral weapons, viruses. Now, let us say, and this is horrible, you wanted to wipe out all persons of Native American, German, and Irish descent. Now, certain genes from those individuals can be taken, manipulated, and turned into a virus that will attack only individuals of that genetic background. Let's make it even nastier.
Population of the United States, practically.
Let's say you want to eradicate only men. You can do that. Let us say you want to eradicate only men of Native American descent, Irish descent, German descent, with blue eyes. You can do that. You can release it into the atmosphere, and it will kill only those individuals. Let us say you want to kill all blonde women of Celtic background. You can do that. Your planet has the technology and capability. That is why I say it is horrific.
It's a genetic weapon, isn't it?
Correct. Now let us go back to viral weapons, bacteria weapons. Let us say you take... What?
It's a genetic weapon. This isn't a new weapon, I take it.
No, it's not a new weapon.
I'm all about genetic weapons, don't I?
Correct. Now, let us say you take a bacteria weapon, such as bubonic plague, where bubbles swell up on the human body and explode. That is, you can deal with that. You have approximately 7 days in which to deal with it. However, with a little bit of gene manipulation of the bacteria, you can make it so nasty, you can wipe out a city population in the space of 48 hours. Not enough time to respond. And what's more, if you wait long enough, up to 3 months, there's no trace of it. If you do a little bit of gene manipulation. So, how do you deliver such a device? Oh, many, many different ways of doing that. From the air, in the water. Most common one, in the water. It's horrible. Why Tia brought that up is because that's what the Iraqis are experimenting with. Biological warfare makes chemical, which is very horrific, which is even worse than nuclear weapons. It's very horrific. Now, here's the really scary, scary part. It's very hard to detect biological weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard.
People start dying by the millions. Not tough to figure out.
Not necessarily. Let us take a little mutation. Now, I know for a fact that this is not so, but there are people out there that might say it is. You take a little animal critter, a primate, that is suffering from a wasting disease. And you create a mutation in the virus. And you set it up in such a way that one individual is bitten by one of these primates that is suffering from this shrinking disorder, this skinny disease. And the blood mixes. Blood from the guns mixed with the blood from the cut on the human. What have you just done?
Ebola.
No. You've created an immune deficiency syndrome. Or, correct. That is how easy biological warfare is. You take a everyday common virus, the common flu virus. A little bit of manipulation. And you have a very nasty, virulent virus.
Yeah, but the knowledge to manipulate that is not an easy knowledge to attain.
No, it's not. But any biologist that goes on further in their education can do it.
Well, what's interesting is that the resolution within the Security Council condemning Iraq for, you know, keeping out these UN peace or inspectors is passing at record speed through the UN Council. Mm-hmm. I think maybe because of this knowledge that they have also.
Correct. Biological warfare or germ warfare is so insidious, so horrific, so nasty, and so uncontrollable.
Why use it?
Why use it?
Yeah. Why, you know, it seems like, you know, what if you get caught? The consequences to your country are devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you remember we did read about a book about this,
mm-hmm.
Executive Decision by Tom Clancy.
Yes.
Which described something quite similar using the Ebola virus.
Correct. So you see.
Right.
Biological weapons do what?
Kill mass people.
Mm-hmm. And what do they make chemical weapons look like?
Toys.
What do they make nuclear weapons look like?
Bigger toys.
Mm-hmm. Because biological weapons, you can't detect until it's way, way too late. Scary, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
with the UN, I think, is pretty wise to this by now, though. And with the inspections being held back, they'll probably get an idea of what's going on. Therefore, they're going to be looking for that more than anything else.
Okay, now, here's the real cruncher on the biological weapons. Mm-hmm. you can set it up in such a way that certain circumstances have to occur.
If we're so awesome at getting these genes to do what we want them to do, what if we were to use them all for peaceful purposes? Couldn't we achieve the standards that Ashtar Command has achieved, or at least come close to that?
I don't know. Okay, let us say that the Germans, or the Nazis, in 1944 were doing gene research, right?
Right.
And they set it up in such a way that by distillation, heading towards a common point, a virus can be created, and it can take as long as 100 years. Or that they introduce into the atmosphere something that is very, very slow to react and works on the principle of distillation. With biological weapons, you can set it to go off whenever you want. You see?
Right.
Okay, any questions?
On this subject?
You got lots.
Yeah, no, I do, but I don't want to bring them up a whole bunch. Because it scares the hell out of me to even discuss this matter.
Yes, it is scary, isn't it?
Well, it just doesn't seem like, you know, we are destined to go that route.
No, we're not, hopefully.
I mean, we got enough problems on our plate.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, let's say that there is the financial crash that comes along.
Uh-huh.
Iraq isn't all that much. Well, Iraq is affected because it depends a lot on its imports.
Correct.
Therefore, in its weakened state, they choose not to use that because by using that, it would weaken the world economy even more and really bring them, you know, all their problems down on their heads.
I don't know. You'd have to ask our political analyst that is going, why did I bring up biological weapons? That opens up a whole new can of worms.
Yeah, it does. Well, we can certainly hope that the inspectors are as good as we hope they are.
Yes, and I believe the tape is almost over.
Thank God.
Okay, well, I better depart, huh?
Okay, darling. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Give Angel my regards, as always.
I like that little comment you made. It's just between her and me.
That's correct.
You're somebody.
I am.
Yes, you are.
Okay, well, Lady Kara must depart.
Farewell, my lady.
You're welcome, peasant. See you later, my lord. Hi.
Idea.
The Lord of her loins, huh?
Lord of her thighs.
I prefer mine, Lord of her loins. Sounds better.
Yes.